Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded. Some treatment and a breathalyzer or an inhalator, it would cost about the same as what we would spend over the course of 10 years. It would cost what it would cost us. It would cost us about the same as it would cost for about. Hold on 1 second. I can't hear myself.
You know what I think? I think somebody was feeding Obama his lines through his earpiece, or through a hidden earpiece, because he's as dumb as a box of rocks. And there was, don't pay attention to the men behind the curtain kind of thing, like in The Wizard of Oz. And he was attempting to listen to what was being fed through an earpiece, and folks were shouting, and he couldn't hear what he was supposed to say. That's just my theory about that. That clip I just played at the end of my theme song. Good evening, folks. You're listening to another fun-filled evening. 1 hour of action-packed history coupled with current events here on the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Yeah. Today's Karen is in the house. That is so cool. March 14th, 2012 AD. Beautiful Old Town Alexandria, Virginia. United States of America, planet Earth, third planet from the sun. Obama, our president, has gone on an apology tour face the UN and apologize for America's misdeeds, apologize for America's arrogance and dismissive and derisiveness. And he has taken the opportunity to become not only Jimmy Carter all over again, but Neville Chamberlain as well. He seeks to engage in diplomacy with Iran when Iran has no interest in diplomacy with the United States. Iran has stated repeatedly that they would like to wipe Israel off the map, and they have every means of doing so. They are building a nuclear arsenal, and they're saying that, on the one hand, they're not. Their nuclear goals are peaceful, and yet they talk, on the other hand, of building a nuclear weapon that could reach Israel and perhaps the United States and blow us all to kingdom come. And our president, who is pro-Muslim and not so pro-Israel, and he's made that clear on a number of occasions, despite what he says, because in the overall analysis, as my father taught me years ago as a young child, it's not what you say, it's what you do. Don't pay attention to what anyone says. Pay attention to what they do. And as it relates to Israel and Iran, Barack Obama has done nothing. And he has earned the label of Jimmy Carter and Neville Chamberlain all in one fell swoop. Let's go to the history lesson tonight.
In return for Hitler's guarantee of world peace, Chamberlain and Deladje prevailed upon Czechoslovakia to give up the Sudetenland without a fight. In Britain, a happy Chamberlain came back declaring he had achieved peace, peace in our time. One of the most tragic and ironic scenes in all history.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
Chamberlain believed that they could do a deal with Hitler, that Britain and Germany had a special affinity.
We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
Winston Churchill had warned his country and his government that they were pursuing a disastrous course with regard to appeasing Germany.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. But if that wasn't enough, let's take one more listen to Neville Chamberlain and his short-sighted appeasement speech.
The settlement of the Czechoslovakian problem, which has now been achieved, is, in my view, only the prelude to a larger settlement in which all Europe may find peace. This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine. Some of you perhaps have already heard what it contains, but I would just like to read it to you. We, the German Führer and Chancellor, and the British Prime Minister have had a further meeting today and are agreed in recognizing that the question of Anglo-German relations is of the first importance for the two countries and for Europe. We regard the agreement signed last night and the Anglo-German naval agreement as symbolic of the desire of our two peoples never to go to war with one another again.
And now, let's go ahead and contrast that. Let's go ahead and contrast that with our current commander-in-chief and what Newt Gingrich had to say about Barack Obama's appeasement stance. I think you'll find it interesting if you haven't already heard it. Barack Obama, it typifies everything that Newt Gingrich is about to say here.
To the president of Afghanistan over the Quran burning. But Newt Gingrich wonders why the president is apologizing, because they didn't apologize for the fact that two Americans were killed, did they? Here's Newt.
The president apologized for the burning, but I haven't seen the president demand that the government of Afghanistan apologize for the killing of two young Americans. Furthermore, my hunch is, since the person who killed them is an Afghan soldier, that soldier was being paid with American money, armed with American money, trained with American money, and there is something profoundly wrong when the commander-in-chief refuses to defend the integrity and the lives of the people who serve under him. There seems to be nothing that radical Islamists can do to get Barack Obama's attention in a negative way, and he is consistently apologizing to people who do not deserve the apology of the President of the United States, period.
Now, President Obama earlier today addressed the United Nations General Assembly for the first time since he was sworn into office, and the dictators assembled there heard from a very different president than this country has become accustomed to over the past 8 months, one who seems to have forgotten some of the defining moments of his own presidency. Let's take a look.
Now, like all of you, my responsibility is to act in the interests of my nation and my people, and I will never apologize for defending those interests.
He'll never apologize. This from the president who has made an apology in art form, prancing from one world capital to another, pointing out America's flaws. Let's just roll this tape.
There have been times where America's shown arrogance and been dismissive, even derisive. The United States is still working through some of our own darker periods in our history. We've at times been disengaged, and at times we've sought to dictate our terms. We have to acknowledge potentially we've made some mistakes. That's how we learn. Unfortunately, faced with an uncertain threat, our government made a series of hasty decisions. In other words, we went off course.
Okay, so we've got it. We've got President Barack Obama, who is in danger of going down in history as the Neville Chamberlain of the 21st century. If he fails to stop Iran's development of the nuclear bomb, Harvard law professor Alan Dershowitz says that he will go just that way. So what's it going to be? How embarrassing is it to have a president of the United States? I mean, we've had Jimmy Carter already, haven't we? And remember the blog talk radio show, the broadcast that I did earlier this week, well, yesterday, where I spoke about how history is cyclical and how we repeat history time after time. In fact, it happens to you and me throughout our lives. We are a microcosm of society. Society is a microcosm of the whole world, and so on. So everything repeats, and what a wise man does, and how a man gets to be 70, 80, 90 years old, is to not repeat the same mistakes over and over again, because, well, what happens? We begin to see the danger signs. We begin to see that something's not right, and it's not based on intuition as much as it's based on repetition. We've seen this before somewhere. in someone's life or in our own. And we learn almost instinctively how to navigate the landmines and pitfalls. That's how we're able to tell our children, hey, I don't think you want to do that. Or you might consider trying this instead of that. Or, hey, don't do that. You're going to burn your little hand. You know, things like that. As we become older, we become wiser through repetition. So we've had Jimmy Carter, and things didn't work out for him very well, did it, with Iran. With his appeasement of Iran and the ill-fated Delta Force operation that resulted in a lot of lives lost for some great warriors, and the Iranian hostage crisis extending beyond what was necessary. It's my opinion that had President Ronald Reagan taken over, had Ronald Reagan been president, those hostages would have been released forthwith. Toot sweet, most Ricky Tick in a quick fashion. But we had Carter, and so things were strung along. Carter was a weak president in many ways. And so with Barack Obama, we have an even weaker president. Let's listen to Dr. Alan Dershowitz explain the situation to us. By the way, you're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report, and I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones.
This has to do with the website's depiction of Israel. Please tell us what it's all about.
Well, it's actually more about its depiction of Americans. It depicts Americans who support Israel, and the vast majority of Americans do support Israel. We have dual loyalty to Israel that we place above our loyalty to this country. For example, AIPAC, which is one of the most respected lobbies in Washington, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. The President of the United States is going to be speaking in front of it in the next few weeks, and I have spoken in front of it. Many senators, congressmen have spoken there. Here's what Media Matters says about AIPAC. Saying AIPAC is guilty of dual loyalty is giving it credit for one more loyalty than it holds. In other words, it essentially accuses AIPAC of treason, of being disloyal to the United States, of having no loyalty to the United States. It calls Benjamin Netanyahu a terrorist. It calls the president of Israel, Shimon Peres, who everybody knows is a peace-loving man, an uber hawk on Iran. It praises essentially anti-Semites who have said that Israel, for example, Helen Thomas, it praises Helen Thomas, who said that, you know, Israelis ought to get the hell out of Israel and go back to Poland or whatever, and says that she should be saluted. And it condemns President Obama for having dissed her at a press conference. Basically, it says that Iran is not interested in getting the bomb, and if they do get the bomb, we are fully capable of containing a nuclear Iran. It is such a vicious organization. And its leading spokesman on Israel, a man named M.J. Rosenberg, has crossed the line, essentially, from anti-Israel to anti-Zionism to anti-Semitism.
You say you're launching a serious campaign against Media Matters. Please tell us about it.
Well, I don't believe that Media Matters should be respected by the White House and by President Obama. I have no reason to believe that President Obama knows about these horrible accusations that have been made against millions of Americans, because if so, I mean, obviously he's speaking at AIPAC, and one of his best friends is the president of AIPAC, a man named Lee Rosenberg from Chicago. So I don't believe the president knows about this, but the White House is in close touch with Media Matters, and they have to disassociate themselves from Media Matters unless Media Matters fires this bigot, M.J. Rosenberg, and distance itself from his statements and apologizes for what he has said. Otherwise, this becomes a major election issue. This becomes a little bit like the Reverend Wright issue in the last election. But there, the president did the right thing. He disassociated himself from the bigotry of Reverend Wright. Now he has to disassociate himself from the bigotry of Rosenberg and of Media Matters.
Alan, please detail a little bit that association you mentioned between the White House and Media Matters.
Well, Media Matters certainly claims that it is close to the White House. It has periodic briefings with the White House. It has had meetings with people very close to the president. Look, I can understand why the White House would like some aspects of what Media Matters does. Media Matters was first founded in order to be a kind of offset to Fox News, fair and balanced Fox News. Media Matters claimed they weren't really fair and balanced, and they were going to attack Fox. They called it the Fox Hunt.
Alan, in your opinion, is Media Matters, are they violating their tax-exempt status?
It could very well be. I mean, they are certainly getting involved in very, very partisan political issues. That's something really for the IRS to look into. I think they're violating their trust to Americans. And, you know, they are not an objective organization, and they have crossed the line into bigotry. And, you know, George Washington said 200 and something years ago.
All right, and we're back with the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. So there you have it. But what do you think? Is history repeating itself? Is Barack Obama the new Neville Chamberlain? Chamberlain was the British Prime Minister who signed the 1938 Munich Agreement with Adolf Hitler, ceding part of Czechoslovakia to Germany, and failing to see the threat the Nazis posed. Barack Obama is seeking diplomacy with Iran and failing to see the threat it poses. Without a doubt, the Middle East will be a factor in voters' minds when they go to the polls in November. And the anti-Israel stance that is very clear to a lot of us when it comes to Barack Hussein Obama. We know that Mr. Obama has a sore spot somewhere for Israel, much as he has for the British. He was not in the White House not one full day before he ordered the bust of Winston Churchill removed and sent back to England. Why did he do that? He seeks to or has alienated all of our traditional friends and embraced many of our enemies. So to be clear, four swing states are involved in this upcoming election. And a lot of the voters in the states that I'm about to mention are going to be swayed as a result of Obama's appeasement toward Iran and his seemingly, well, I don't even know what to say, his disregard for our strong relationship with Israel. Those states are Florida, Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, in which fears about Iran and the administration's lukewarm support of Israel could be critical. If Iran were to develop a nuclear or nuclear weapons prior to the election, that would be a disaster for Obama's reelection prospects, among many other things. Obama himself generally has shown that he is friendly to the Jewish state, but some of his subordinates, including Defense Secretary Leon Panetta and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Martin Dempsey, have not. Panetta has been talking with mixed messages, while Dempsey made the absurd statement that Iran should be considered a rational actor. Rational actors don't kill their own people. Rational actors don't slaughter and execute thousands of their own people. Rational actors don't deny the Holocaust. Rational actors don't call for the state of Israel to be wiped off the map. And Alan Dershowitz said he accepts that Obama has the right to criticize some aspects of Israel's policies, such as building settlements on the West Bank. It's fair to be critical of Israel and Israeli policies, as you can be critical of American policies. I'm a loyal patriot of this country, and I criticize some of our own policies, and I support many of our own policies, Dershowitz said. But, he added, the true test of Obama's support for Israel will come over Iran. Iran poses an existential threat. Not only is Israel's existence at stake, but America's safety as well. Dershowitz also called for Obama to cut ties with the left-wing website Media Matters for America, because the stance of its senior foreign policy fellow, M.J. Rosenberg, has anti-Israel feelings. He's anti-Semitic from the core of his very being. Calling Rosenberg a bigot, Dershowitz said the senior fellow has crossed the line from anti-Israel to anti-Zionism to anti-Semitism. He quoted a recent tweet that Rosenberg issued last year in which he attacked the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, over alleged dual loyalty. So where's all this going? Folks, seriously now, we have elected Jimmy Carter all over again, and it just didn't work. Now, I blame President Bush, because he pretty much teed this whole thing up. If we're going to be honest about the fall of America and where it began, I would have to honestly state, and I hesitate to say this, to be this candid, I would have to say that it began with our Republican president, our conservative president, George Bush, the son. He teed this up for Obama. I mean, it was brilliant. It couldn't have been worse if he'd planned it himself. He allowed things to get so out of hand with the economy, with the war, with the two wars we're fighting, to the point where he made it easy. It's Germany all over again. And so, as easy as it was for Adolf Hitler to come into power and seize power and turn that republic into a socialist nightmare, so it was that our former president, George Bush, made it easy for President Obama to come in and do the very same thing. Appeasement, it doesn't work. It has never worked. It doesn't work on the playground when you're confronted with a bully, and it certainly does not work with the President of the United States. It does not work, folks. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll come right back. You've been listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. The call-in number is
347-884-8500. Let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war, but there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement. And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war. Only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum, And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side, he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than death. Or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material complications. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. He said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
Where's that guy? It's a simple answer after all. Where's that guy? Where's our Ronald Reagan right now? We are in desperate need of a leader. We're in desperate need of someone to step up and lead this great country back to prosperity. Barack Obama promised so many things. None of them had anything to do with American greatness. It was not about, for him, for Obama, it's not about shared prosperity. It's about shared sacrifice. It's not about ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. It's the other way around. And now we're faced with a situation where this country, and I kid you not, is going to be just pedestrian, just another country on this planet. Average, no better, no worse than any other country. We've been dismissive and arrogant and derisive. And I've never heard a person use the word dismissive and derisive in the same sentence. Did you hear him? Did you hear Ronald Reagan? Did you hear what he said? Where's that guy? You know, no matter how many speeches Barack Obama gives, no matter how many teleprompter speeches he gives, he'll never inspire the way that man did. I'm inspired right now just listening to that clip for the 50th time in my lifetime. I think earlier today was 49, and right now it's 50. Instead of our Ronald Reagan, we've got Mitt Romney. We've got Newt Gingrich, and we've got Santorum. Santorum is surging. Why? Mitt is arguably just as conservative as Santorum. Romney, not so much. We've got two great conservatives. Neither can hold the Gipper's leather helmet. Neither one comes close to being Ronald Reagan. First, Newt has no charisma. He just doesn't have the it factor. Santorum got charisma, got style, reminds you a lot of Reagan in a lot of ways, but is lacking the intensity. And then we've got Mitt Romney, who is leading in the delegate count. Folks are speaking their minds, though, at this time. They're saying that we need a true conservative. We need Ronald Reagan back here. And you're not Ronald Reagan, Mitt. You're certainly not Ronald Reagan, Newt. And perhaps Santorum is the closest thing to Reagan as we're going to get. Yes, we can. No, the hell we can. No, we can't. We shouldn't. No way in hell we should. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. We'll be right back.
We are a nation under God, and I believe God intended for us to be free. With God's help, we can and will resolve the problems which now confront us. And after all, why shouldn't we believe that? We are Americans. I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. You are to decide the important question upon which rests the happiness and the liberty of millions yet unborn. Act worthy of yourselves.
All right. Let's take a listen to my man, John Voight, and what he thinks.
Appeasement or apologizing for our country, this country which has liberated so many parts of Europe and Iraq now, and we spent our blood in Kosovo, our great young soldiers. We've done so much for the world, and for us to apologize, I think, is a bit of an insanity. But it's a very dangerous time now, and we should be very wary of giving, you know, our enemies across the world the idea that we are weakened in any way. Now's the time for us to come together in strength, and we certainly should gather around our allies. And one of the major allies in the world, maybe the major ally in the world, arguably, is Israel.
John Voight pretty much said it all, didn't he? Appeasement. Let's not go to war. Let's not rattle our sabers. Let's try to negotiate. Let's not be the ugly Americans. Let's not be arrogant and dismissive and derisive and too quick at the trigger. Let's try to talk things out. Did that work with the bully on the playground? No. It didn't. Obama apologizes for the United States of America. He apologizes. It's okay. Obama's ignorant statement to the French, apologizing for American arrogance. The tremendous American sacrifice was not of arrogance, but out of belief in the freedom from tyranny. The American cemetery, Anzy Marine, France, a total of 2,289 of our military dead. The American cemetery in Andreas, Belgium, a total of 5,329 of our dead. The American cemetery, Brittany, France, a total of 4,410 of our military dead. The American cemetery, Brookwood, England, a total of 468 of our military dead. Cambridge, England, 3,812 of our military dead. American cemetery, Epinal, France, a total of 5,525 of our military dead. Flanders Field, Belgium, a total of 368 of our military dead. Florence, Italy, a total of 4,402 of our military dead. Thierry Chapel, Belgium, a total of 7,992 of our military dead. Lorraine, France, a total of 10,489 of our military dead. Luxembourg, a total of 5,760 of our military dead. Meuse, Argonne, a total of 14,246 of our military dead. Netherlands, a total of 8,301 of our military men and women dead. Normandy, France, a total of 9,387 of our military dead. Assa Ani, France, a total of 6,012 of our military dead. Rona, France, a total of 861 of our military dead. Sicily, Italy, a total of 7,861 of our military dead. Somme, France, a total of 1,844 of our military dead. Saint-Mélie, France, a total of 4,153 of our military dead. Irinis, France, a total of 1,541 of our military dead. Apologize to no one. Remind those of our sacrifice and don't confuse arrogance with leadership. The only apology needed is for the elected traitor of the United States, the highest office of America, is to apologize to us. Apology, my ass. All right. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. Maybe I got a little out of hand there, and I do apologize for that. There should be no apologizing. That clown we have in the White House who has the brains God gave a goose, who doesn't have the brains God gave a goose, rather, seeks to apologize and appease other nations. He seeks to be the anti-George Bush, the anti-Ronald Reagan, the anti-anybody who served this country faithfully and with honor and dignity. Obama is not a leader, folks. He's a politician. He campaigned for the office of the presidency, and he convinced enough fools to vote for him and put him into office That does not make him a leader of men and women. That does not even make him a leader of this great nation. That makes him probably the luckiest son of a bitch in the world that he was able to so to the extent that he was able to con folks to go in and vote for him so that he can turn this country into a wasted heap of nothing. The appeaser in chief. Apologize. We apologize to no one. I want to tell a personal story here right now. Sort of break things up a little bit. Earlier today, I spoke with my sister. And she was angry. She was really, really angry. And when she's angry, you just put the phone down and just go about the, you know, doing your business, and you can hear her. You don't even have to put the speaker phone thing on the phone. You can hear her. You just put the phone down. She was hot. I have a niece who lives in North Carolina. Once one of the most beautiful, charming, the sweetest young girl in all of North Carolina. I mean, when her mom and my sisters would take her on outings, say to South Beach, long weekends, folks would ask, who is she? Wow, she's so beautiful. Movie producers, modeling agencies, they all wanted her. In fact, one well-known modeling agency offered her a contract. They loved her hair. In the hood, she had what we call good hair. Some of you know what I'm talking about. She was sweet. She had these beautiful almond-shaped eyes. She still does. But the day before she was supposed to go in to sign a contract and begin her career as one of the nation's top models, a friend of hers, one of her little good ghetto hood rat friends, convinced her to cut her hair. So she cut her hair. She went into the modeling agency the next day, and they promptly turned her away because part of the deal was that she'd keep her hair. Opportunity lost, bridges burned. We decided we were going to get her into a good college. So we got her into North Carolina A&T. Not one of the best schools, but college nonetheless. She took classes for a full semester and then decided that she wasn't really ready for college. She wanted to spend time with her friends. A lot of her friends were working and just out enjoying life. She felt that she wanted to get out and enjoy life as well. She began working job after job, a cashier here, one of those folks who answered the phones, you know, those call center girls for AT&T or whatever. Little menial jobs here and there. The years roll by. She's having a good time. Ghettoed out to the max. We try to get her back into college, offering to pay. She was like, no, I really don't feel like going back right now. The friends that she did have who pursued college careers had already graduated and were pursuing careers doing all sorts of really good things. She was such a beautiful girl that she had men of means wanting to take her hand, wanting to date her, just wanting to go out and be seen with her because she's such a beautiful girl. I'm talking bankers, young men who were working hard. Men in business attire, well-mannered, well-dressed. They'd come to the house. She didn't want to have anything to do with them. They were too square, too boring. They were boring guys. When her future husband came over, pants on the ground. Pants on the ground, looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. He show up, ghettoed out, working as a janitor, a cleaning crew, a night office cleaning crew. Oh, he was it. He was the man. Wow. Look at what the cat dragged in. A ghetto hood rat. A baby's daddy, three times over, with three different women. We thought, well, what happened to the nice guys that used to come here? The guys driving BMWs, wearing nice, decent clothes, suits, ties. You know, guys with, like, jobs. Who could take care of her the way that she deserved. Oh, well, you know, they were just boring me. They were boring. Okay, so now we've got the hood rat with the three children from three different ladies. She marries the guy. The guy doesn't even have a driver's license. He's still working the cleaning crew. She's living like a pauper in a one-bedroom apartment with a ghetto guy who basically has no ambition whatsoever. Doubtful if he even has a high school diploma. He's driving her car back and forth to work. He has no license. His license is suspended. He has failed to get his license renewed. He has failed to pay the numerous tickets in order to get his license back, but yet he drives her car and, in fact, wrecked the car and nearly totaled it. The car is about 7 or 8 years old. It's on its last legs, and yet he drives it. Now they're married, and they have a child. They're living in a one-room shack. He's a ghettoed out to the max, still doesn't have a job, but yet somehow they managed to purchase Timberland shoes, FUBU clothing, Gucci, and all of that at the expense of furniture, maybe a decent car, maybe a nice place to live. Instead, they spend their money on really expensive ghetto wear. So, let's get to the kicker right now, because here it is right now. Yesterday, dude finally got a job. Oh, yeah, minimum wage, of course. The guy can barely speak English. My dog speaks better English than he does. So now, we'll call her D, calls up her mama, my sister, and says, you know, I need another car because I need to get to work and blah, blah, blah. My husband just got a job working in some some fry kitchen doing the dishwasher, and he needs to get to work. And I'm thinking of asking grandma and grandpa for one of their cars. My sister says, don't. Don't even try it. First of all, they're going to say no. You're not responsible. You had every opportunity to square yourself away and you didn't. Don't even ask them. So, she ignores my sister's advice, calls up grandma, and asks for one of grandma's cars. They have two, or rather three. Grandma promptly says no, because granny doesn't want that ghetto hood rat husband of hers driving her ride and ruining it. And besides, D, as we'll call her, is irresponsible. So now D calls mama back and is all mad. She's upset and she says, why won't grandma let me have one of her cars? She's got three. She's not really using them. It's not fair. So I think you know where I'm going here. The entitlement mentality. This is how it's all going to play out. And it's playing out here, right here in my family, on a small scale. Grandma and grandpa worked hard all their lives to achieve a certain level of comfort. They have three vehicles. One to a big truck vehicle to, you know, haul the hay around for the cows and stuff. And then they've got two smaller vehicles. They bought those vehicles with their own money, sacrificed, saved, scraped. They live a pretty good life in retirement. So now D comes around, who's squandered every single opportunity she's had to better her life and become a person of just even the most modest means. And she squandered every opportunity. But yet she's still looking for a handout. She's still looking for somebody to do something for her because you've got three cars. You should give me one because I need it. Oh, yeah, that nice guy who I brought home one day, you know, the really boring one, he's now a bank president and he's not even 30. And, yeah, I guess I could have married him, but he was boring. I probably would have been rolling around in a nice car right now, but instead of, you know, taking the nice guy, I decided to become ghetto fabulous and marry a no-good piece of crap bum. And because of these choices that I made, even though everyone around me tried to help me become a better person, but because of the choices I made, well, they should be disregarded. You've got money. You've got things. You've got it all, and I need it. You should give it to me. You've got too much, and I want some of it. So now what I have here, your humble host, Clarence Robert Jones III, is my own Occupy. I've got my own 99%er in my own family, demanding to have some of our riches simply because we have it and she doesn't. And even though she had every opportunity to acquire the things, the finer things in life, it was put on a tray, on a platter. She squandered every single opportunity. We offered to take her on a cruise with us. All you really have to do to go on this lavish, expensive 14-day cruise is to look after, you know, Liz every once in a while, a four-year-old. She said, I don't want to go on no cruise and be nobody's babysitter. So you see, you get an all-expense-paid cruise opportunity and all you have to do is look after a kid every once in a while. But she saw it as being just another babysitter. Forget that it was all expenses paid, a lavish, extravagant holiday. No, she saw it as her being somebody's bitch, somebody's victim. I got my own Occupy in my own house, you all. I want to thank everybody for listening. You've been listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
always with the negative waves, Moriarty. Always with the negative waves.